Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Ready? One, two, three, four!
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about, you know, the Iditarod. We are a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM in Nome. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we get into today's episode, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod 2018 comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
Well, we're into day two of the 2018 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. That's after the official race clock started in Willow yesterday. Mushers headed west to the first checkpoint, Yentna, and then on to Squintna. It was a festive atmosphere overnight in Squintna as the Iditarod mushers pulled into the checkpoint. That was about 83 miles into the trail. A bonfire blazed, a musician belted out songs from a small heated tent, and a few dozen race fans and onlookers were gathered when the first mushers headlamp emerged out of the darkness and headed toward the race checkers under a welcome banner.
Bib number?
17.
And name?
Ray Reddington.
Welcome, Ray. You staying or going?
Over here.
Staying. Okay, you know the drill.
After signing in, Ray Reddington Jr. and all 16 of his dogs pulled in for a rest at about 9:30 p.m. Sunday night. Just 1 minute behind him was Mats Pettersson, who led the full pack of mushers for a stretch of the evening before being overtaken not long before arriving. Pettersson says so far the trail conditions are good.
A little bit soft in the beginning, I think, for everybody, but after Jentna it was really fine all the way here. So.
Pettersson also came in with a full string of dogs. The third musher into the checkpoint was Mitch Seavey, the defending champion. He made the run in about the same amount of time as Pettersson, but did so with just 12 dogs on the line when he pulled in. Even still, Seavey says he was working to keep them at a slower, more controlled pace.
But, you know, I got four dogs in the sled. That kind of helps slow things down.
Seavey and his son Dallas have dominated the Iditarod in recent years while refining a strategy that involves rotating dogs in and out of their sleds for rest along the way. The next few checkpoints after Squintna pass through the Alaska Range, one of the most technically difficult sections of the trail. As I'm recording this Monday morning, a handful of mushers had reached Finger Lake 123 miles into the race. They were led into the checkpoint by Willow's Linwood Fiedler, who checked in at 3:43 a.m. Monday, followed by Girdwood's Nicholas Petit just 13 minutes behind. Now, Fiedler started in 8th and pushed through to the lead, but Petit started in 46th out of 67 mushers. So that means he passed 44 other mushers to arrive second in Finger Lake. Pretty impressive. We've talked about this a lot so far on the podcast, but there are differing strategies and plans, possibly different versions of plans. You see Mitch Seavey slowing his team down, building rest for later in the race. We might be seeing Petit's plan coming together here, though. Maybe long runs to build a lead early on. Still hard to tell, and we'll be watching him closely. Petit finished third last year and has been steadily climbing up the finishing order. He's certainly hoping to win his first Iditarod this year, but other mushers, definitely the rookies, they're just hoping to finish. Their goals are a bit different. That includes Matt Hall, originally from Eagle and mushing out of Two Rivers with his Smoke and Ace Kennels dogs. Hall won the 2017 Yukon Quest, but this is his first Iditarod. KNOM's Davis Hovey caught up with Hall on Saturday in downtown Anchorage before the ceremonial start.
You're no stranger to long-distance races, but this is your first Iditarod, so what are you hoping to accomplish in this race?
Well, that's just it. It is my first Iditarod, so I mean, I know how to run 1,000 miles, my team does as well, but this is the Iditarod, so we don't know it. So my goal would just be the finish line, which is, you know, pretty basic. I would hope that it's more than just the finish line, but you know, we're gonna have to see once we get down there.
Again, going back to your history with the Quest, I mean, you're a champ. What's your thoughts on the differences or the similarities between the Quest and the Iditarod?
I mean, there's definitely a lot more going on here, a lot more people, but that's part of what makes the Quest the Quest. I mean, the Iditarod is huge for our sport. The Quest is more of a family. You know, that's kind of, you know, there's too much here to be a family. So, you know, that's kind of both are nice in their own ways. We need both for the sport and to support each other as well. You know, there doesn't need to be two Quests. There doesn't need to be two Iditarods. Like, they're each their own event. They're each their own race. You know, I love the Yukon Quest, and I'll tell you here in 10 days when I'm in Nome, but so far I love the Iditarod too, so happy to be here.
I guess off of that then, Matt, why is it important for you to run the Iditarod this year after doing the Quest for so long and only the Quest?
I've been wanting to run the Iditarod for quite a few years, and kind of the way my career started out after our first year in Quest doing good, it was kind of, I felt like it was expected of me to come back to Quest. The plan was to run Iditarod in 2015, the year after Quest. I started out with Quest because it's kind of in my family. My father's ran it before where I grew up in Eagles, one of the checkpoints, so I've just seen the race for a lot of years. So in 2015, I was like, all right, I need to go back to the Quest again. And then we had a bad run that year. That was my only time I've ever scratched from a race. So then to myself, I was like, now I got to go back again and rebuttal on that. So then the 2016 season, and then 2017, last year we were really hurting for money, just kind of barely scraping by, and we weren't planning on doing any 1,000-mile races. And then we're like, all right, we know the Quest. We can run it a lot cheaper than we can Iditarod just because we already have the equipment for this race. We'll do Quest one more time, you know, than we won last year. So then at that point, it was like, okay, we picked up a few more sponsors, which made it affordable to do both races this year. And with the team we had last year, I got no excuse to not run them both. You know, we obviously have a really, really good team. So here I am today, and we're excited to get out there.
Another rookie to watch is Jesse Holmes out of Nenana. He won the Yukon Quest 300 in 2016 and the Kobuk 440 last year. He's become one of the best mid-distance mushers out there. But this is Holmes' first Iditarod. Davis also talked to him on Saturday.
I mean, it's your first Iditarod, but you're coming off the Kobuk 440 win. You were in the K300, obviously some bad weather conditions and trail conditions out there, but what are you looking forward to accomplishing in this race?
Well, rookie of the year would be nice, but really my focus is to run this dog team to the level of their capabilities. Right now, all I've seen in the past shows me their high level of desire and athleticism, so I'm going to try to push to the front, not the very front, but somewhere in position of the top 10, and try to stay there as long as I'm seeing the right things out of my dog team, because I don't want to sell myself short, for one thing, because, you know, there's a lot of nervousness going into a race, 1,000 miles, never been there before, but I got the team set up for 1,000 miles. We've dropped the speeds down, and we've just really been focusing on breaking trail in the kind of conditions we're going to see out there. So I think just try to hang in there, and if things don't look so good, then I'll start resting a lot and try to make sure I'm in that contention for Rookie of the Year against probably my strongest competition, Matt Hall.
So some rookies to watch, among others. You heard Davis ask about the controversy. Some of that is related to a dog doping scandal. We talked about that in episode 2. And somewhat separately, there's a minor amount of drama and hand-wringing on the Iditarod's part over lost sponsorship dollars. That feeds the race purse for which Iditarod finishers are vying $500,000 this year. And that brings us to today's question. It's from Wes Adkins in Juneau.
My question is about the sponsorships issue that you all covered and touched on in past episodes. Given Wells Fargo's exit from the Iditarod Association, how healthy are the other big sponsorships?
That was Wes and his cat, I guess, and I posed this question to Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes and our other trail reporter from last year, Ben Matheson, when they were in the studio with me last week.
Thank you for the great question, Wes. Sponsorships came into the spotlight this preseason, as we found out after the loss of Wells Fargo, that the Iditarod really is in a precarious spot with some of its sponsors, according to the 4-Acre report, the nonprofit performance report that they received. Now, I guess, Zach, we don't know exactly the status of all of these individual sponsors, but it's clear that the race is taking this seriously and is trying to improve communication, is trying to improve, you know, stakeholder buy-in across the board.
Yeah. So, Wes, thanks for the great question. At its media briefing ahead of the race, the Iditarod every year brings out its major sponsors. And this year, four of them are still hanging in there. You have Donlin Gold, you have ExxonMobil, you have a car dealer, a truck dealer here in town, and then GCI are all still with the race. So a lot of those major sponsors are still there. There's, I think, about 20 more sponsors at a lower level that are also contributing. And as we learned in the 4-Acre report, financial support is crucial for the race. It's really the keystone for a lot of the financing that makes it possible, on top of a lot of unpaid volunteer labor. So if sponsors start to leave, the race is really in jeopardy. They've come, they've gone. Wells Fargo certainly is a major kind of loss for the race. But we don't have any indications that some of the other major sponsors are thinking about pulling out. That doesn't mean they haven't thought about it. That doesn't mean they're not thinking about it. But there's no evidence to suggest that they are, at least not that I've seen.
As always, please send your questions about the Iditarod or dog mushing in general to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. We'll take just plain old emails, but even better, because we work in radio and it's all about sound, please send us that question in voice memo form. Most smartphones have a voice memo app, and you just open that up, record your question in your own voice, and send it to us, like I said, at iditarod@alaskapublic.org. And that's your chance to get on the podcast in your own voice. We really appreciate that. We'll do our best to answer those questions, or if we can't, we will pose them to the mushers on the trail. Well, that's all we have time for today. We're in the midst of our daily episodes, so check back tomorrow morning for the next installment of the Iditapod. You can find us on iTunes and other podcatcher apps, or listen online at alaskapublic.org. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm Casey Grove. Until next time, happy trails.
Guys, what do you think are the implications of having cat sounds in a podcast that is about a sled dog race?
You know, I am all about sonic variants, and I think if somebody has a pet cat and also loves dog mushing, power to them.
That's not a term, Zach, but I have the same sentiments.
Which one's not a term?
Sonic variants.
We just coined it.
You've just been out of radio for too long. Sonic variants is a widely used term by myself and by others, I'm sure.
I hope this doesn't impact our sponsorship, however.
Cat Smart, bringing you the best in cat care, this Iditapod.
And cut.